You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. In your backyard. And worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumour.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes. What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes.
Yeah, minutes. It's not your next year, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. If you're a Telstra shareholder, you must seriously be wondering about the wisdom of your investment in what used to be the most highly regarded and respected Australian-owned and operated telco. Since the demise of Ziggy and the appointment of Sol and his three amigos, the company's reputation in the eyes of most Australians has been somewhat tarnished. The ongoing stoush with the Australian government over fibre to the node, along with pricing issues with the ACCC, and now the threat by Telstra's public affairs boss and bull terrier, Phil Burgess. You remember him? He was the one who wouldn't sell Telstra shares to his mother to invest the $4 billion allocated to fibre to the node into something else, and probably overseas, really makes you wonder where their loyalties lie. Most other IT companies invest unconditionally for the future, earning the reputation of being innovators and leaders in their field. With success comes respect and loyalty with both consumers and manufacturers. Take Apple for example. Like them or loathe them, Apple has a league of devout followers who, for whatever reason, worship the technology that Steve Jobs and his colleagues dish up. Apple may have their run-ins with government and business from time to time, but it doesn't stall the process of development and rollout of new technology. This, unfortunately, is not the same for Telstra. Dr. Phil Burgess addressed a Rotary Club launch in Melbourne this week, and the mudslinging he's renowned for was flying thick and fast. The headline in the Australian newspaper made me laugh. Terror threat if Telstra loses. I just had to read on. This time, Phil was ramping up the fear factor about the strategic role Telstra plays when providing services to ASIO in the form of phone intercepts. He said, that is something that has to be an intimate relationship between the judicial authorities and security authorities and the telecommunications company. You want the government of Singapore to be at the table on that? He went on to say he didn't know any country in the world, and he didn't know any press in the world, that would stand by with their hands in their pockets and watch critical infrastructure be turned over to a foreign government. Not bad for a PR boss whose company is about to sue the federal government for missing out on winning a tender for broadband in the bush. Maybe Phil's dealing with the wrong department, and Senator Coonan could introduce Dr. Phil Burgess to Kevin Andrews, the Minister for Immigration and Citizenship. After all, Kevin Andrews takes a great deal of interest in foreign doctors who deal in SIM cards. Maybe Phil could spend some time at Hotel Villawood and then be deported as a threat to national security. Now there's a thought, two birds with the one stone. Shareholders, rejoice.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Dr. Ron takes a look at Australia's first synchrotron. Elton John blasts the internet. New online ad systems threaten privacy. Digital online delivery takes the lead in the format race. And iTunes reaches a new milestone. All that and more on Australia's premier Tech Talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Telstra sues Coonan over funding to competitors, the New South Wales Supreme Court says an eBay sale is legally binding, Sony hints at digital TV tuner plug-in for PlayStation 3, Pioneer feels the pressure as plasma profits slump, and Korean War highlights are now available for mobile download. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra commenced legal proceedings in the federal court against Communications Minister Helen Coonan on Friday last week. This latest spat between the incumbent telco and the government's communications senator is over her decision to increase funding for the Broadband Connect Infrastructure Fund to the Singtel Optus and Elders Consortium from the original $600 million to almost $1 billion. Telstra is alleging that the process by which the funding was increased and awarded to Opel was not fair and equitable, despite an independent inquiry by the Australian National Audit Office already finding no impropriety in the process. According to Telstra, the Broadband Connect program guidelines offered up to $600 million of taxpayers' money to provide broadband to underserved rural and regional areas. Telstra submitted its proposal on that basis. When government funding was awarded to Opel, Telstra says it asked the minister to explain why it was not given an opportunity to submit a revised proposal, and claims that the minister has allegedly refused to provide an answer and refused to provide relevant documentation detailing the ultimate award of Broadband Connect funding. The incumbent, in a statement, said, "Telstra has been left with no alternative but to seek orders from the federal court compelling the communications minister to provide documents relating to how the decision was made." A judge in the New South Wales Supreme Court last week ruled that a sale on eBay is legally binding in the real world after a defendant failed to hand over a vintage aeroplane he sold on the online auction site. The defendant, Vin Thomas, changed his mind after listing a 1946 World War II Wirraway plane for sale on eBay. Thomas reportedly got a better offer for the aircraft offline and failed to provide it to the winning bidder. The judge agreed with the winning bidder, Mr. Peter Smythe, and ordered that Thomas hand over the plane for the agreed eBay auction amount. The judgment sets a precedent for future cases and means eBay sales could now be legally binding. Before the ruling was handed down, eBay spokesman Daniel Filer was adamant that any decision would have no impact on public confidence in the auction site. Filer added that eBay sellers had the option to reject any bids before an auction closed, and encouraged both buyers and sellers to examine feedback history before proceeding with a transaction. While Sony continues to enjoy success with its PlayStation 3, the head of marketing at Sony Computer Entertainment New Zealand last week hinted at a digital TV tuner also being on the cards for the popular games console. Warwick Light, head of marketing at SCE New Zealand, said, "We're hoping next year, about the same time that Freeview launches its terrestrial broadcasting service, to release a digital tuner for the PS3, turning it into a programmable TV recorder." Freeview currently operates a satellite service and is expected to commence terrestrial transmissions using DVB-T in early 2008. Although no indication was given that Sony plans to introduce the tuner in other markets, the DVB-T standard is also used in Europe and Australia. The move is expected to cement the PS3's place in the digital living room, particularly as it already ships standard with an integrated Blu-ray disc player. Despite selling out of plasma stock in Australia, Pioneer last week reported a 14% drop in plasma TV sales and losses of $50 million for the last quarter. Smart House News reported that Pioneer Electronics released lower sales figures and announced a double-digit drop in operating income due to lower profitability in home electronics and weaker exchange rates during its fiscal first quarter, which ended on June 30. Tony Trent from Pioneer Electronics spoke with Tech Talk Radio last year and explained that the company was the first to manufacture high-definition plasma televisions and decided to specialise in plasma over LCD and other television technologies.
We think it's got some inherent advantages for the home over LCD, so it's closer. It's a phosphor-based screen, so we feel that we can get better brightness, better levels of contrasting you can off an LCD, and approximate, you know, closer to what people expect from normal CRT televisions.
Despite Pioneer's optimism, consolidated operating revenue was now down 4.7% from the previous year's first quarter, with drops in plasma displays being blamed, along with weaker international currencies. And The Age Tech last week reported that Chinese mobile phone users can now download film clips of the Korean War and stirring military anthems to celebrate the founding of the People's Liberation Army. Subscribers to China Unicom, the smaller of the country's two mobile telecom operators, are being offered the service for about $1 a month, according to the official Xinhua news agency. Customers will also be able to get military news sent straight to their handsets from the Army's very own newspaper. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Tonight we're talking mobiles.
Now, I guess in my industry, everyone just uses it. It's a work tool sort of thing, so they don't have time. I mean, you know, they don't want to be near their phone when they go home sort of thing.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
I can only see SMS getting stronger.
Eventually it'll head that way, but at the moment the SMS has got the it's always on type of thing. If the phone's on, you can always get your SMS through.
One of the obvious differences between XP and moving up to Vista is the new Aero Glass interface.
It sounds like me on steroids.
Ah, good work, that man. Well done.
I've got a gripe here. Next G, not so good for the bush.
New Nokia is not the best handset for rural users in marginal areas.
Did it have
areas.
A blue tick? Because this is where Telstra have...
Tell us about the blue tick. I don't know about this.
I love out of context promos, don't we? Spam's one of those things. Like, I just got some spam from some Arabic country. I couldn't read it. It was lovely pictures, though. But not really.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And a very big hello to everybody listening to us. Wherever you might happen to be around this wonderful big country of ours, welcome to another edition of Tech Talk Radio. And boy, what a week it's been. Senator Coonan's out, politics is thick and fast, technology's happening at a ferocious rate, and three people sitting around this panel have no doubt been spending a lot of time wolfing. Dr. Ron, you're one of the best wilfers around, from what I can gather. How's your wilfing week been?
It has been a week of wilfing. You're right. What a lot of news and interesting stuff in the technology world.
It has been an incredible week. The reason why I say wilfing, which is what was I looking for
indeed.
On the internet.
That's it.
I've been doing a bit of research on these iPhone things because there's been a fair bit of chat in and amongst the Tech Talk Radio people of recent times about that, which we'll talk about very shortly. But I went to the Apple site and I wilfed. I went to the iTunes movie, what do you call them, trailer downloads.
Ah, yes.
Have you been there of recent time?
Not of recent times.
They've got some, they've gone high def. In the Apple movie trailer, so I thought, oh, yeah, I'll just give this a whirl.
They still give you the option of the three different formats, so you can...
Six different formats, yes.
Six different formats.
Yeah, so you go all the way up to 1080p, progressive.
I'll have to go and check it out.
I downloaded a few of them. If you've got a PC which is sort of relatively well connected to a sound system, they're pretty darn good to have a bit of a look at, so... Downloaded the Harry Potter trailer, which you got an email about, and a few other movies that were there. But you've got to be careful because these are big files, guys. They're over 100 meg for a movie trailer. Now, you need to be ADSL 2 equipped, I would be saying, or else, if not, FlatNAC or ADSL 1. But well worth the wilf. Speaking of wilfing, Graham, how's your week been?
It's been very good, Andrew.
You've been wilfing on any site? You go to a site and you get distracted and then you come back half an hour later feeling
that
you've lost...
Oh, that happens all the time. Yeah, it's
especially really when you're looking for stories for this show, I find.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I notice you have been wilfing because you sent us something through about printers.
That's right, yeah.
We're going to talk about that later on the show, too.
I was following links all around the world about, yeah, printers can... Be as bad as smoking, apparently, for your health.
Really? Well, we'll talk about that. This is the obviously the carbon stuff, laser printers, wasn't it?
Yeah, little jets. Fine particles that come out of your laser printer. Yeah, so yeah, we'll be talking about that later on.
Very good. All right. All that and more on Tech Talk Radio. I had blue screen of death on my Windows XP box this week.
On your XP machine?
Yes.
What did you do to it?
I did nothing to it.
What did you do to provoke that?
Did you take a photo of it with your camera phone?
I've got it here. Well, actually, the result of the photograph.
And you make it your wallpaper on your telephone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You've probably never had a blue screen of death, or very seldomly do you get a blue screen of death on a you know, Windows XP box. But no, I managed to get it this time. Now, when the machine rebooted and came back up sort of feeling sorry for itself, it said...
Windows has recovered from a serious error.
That's the one. Serious, you're not kidding. You just blue screen. I lost my work. You're such and such. I sweared and cursed. And
except Word's pretty good at doing the document recovery thing now.
I wasn't in Word. I was in an audio process recording voices and stuff, and they recover
No, they don't recover quite so well, no.
Doing this show, and it just went kaput. But anyway, I pushed the little button that said, would you like to report this process to Microsoft?
And you clicked send.
I said, yeah, why not? You
might as well
learn of my grief here. Anyway, a few moments later, I had a little pop-up come back up on my screen in the form of a web browser, and it said, the problem was caused by your NVIDIA graphics driver.
Well, there you go.
It said, this problem was caused by the graphics driver. The problem was created by the program. Sorry, not problem. The program was created by NVIDIA Corporation, and NVIDIA Corporation does not currently have a solution from the problem that you reported.
Oh, Okay.
Recommendations? Change graphics card.
Yeah.
The million-dollar question, though, do you have an NVIDIA graphics card in that machine?
Yeah, I do, actually. Adam speaks highly of them in the media
centers, too. Yes, he does. Don't mention the war.
No. No. That's gone awfully quiet all of a sudden.
But the good news is that because you click send, and hopefully other people who are having the same problem click send, that the problem is now in Microsoft's database.
Oh, no, they've handballed it. They've done the Polypharma.
Yeah, but they'll be able to give that information to NVIDIA or work with them, and hopefully there'll be a new release of the drivers will come out at some point.
Yes.
So watch your Windows updates and go in and do a manual Windows update on the Windows Update website once in a while to see if there's any new drivers, because new drivers don't come through in the automatic updates. You have to go to the Windows Update website to see if there's any new drivers there.
Now, one thing that I will comment about with this fault developing, this is the same machine I've had for a long time. It hasn't had an upgrade of recent times, except I've gone to a new resolution on a new widescreen monitor. I bought one of the 20-inch widescreen LCDs.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And it's only started to happen since then. So, obviously, the NVIDIA driver just is not up to scratch on these widescreen monitors.
It could be that, or it could be a feature that's being used in a program that wasn't used previously. It could be, you know, an update to some other program.
They're bugs.
Bugs.
Features. They're bugs, aren't they?
Yeah, well, could be either.
Did you know that bugs actually come from the old army days, where the first bug came from? This is a bit of history.
I'm not sure how accurate the information is, but
you reckon it's myth now, legend.
I'm not sure where the line between truth and legend lives, but apparently it was in the old days of mechanical computers with switches.
Yeah, there's a moth
big relay switches and a moth in the
This is, there's a bug.
I heard that one too. That's the story I understood.
Yeah, I'm not sure how true it is. We'll have to go. There's a really good site.
Oh, I don't believe what you're reading on the internet.
UrbanLegends.com.
Snopes,
that's right. Yeah, that's a good one.
A couple of good ones that debunk these urban legends, so I'd be interesting to go there and see what they say about that. But yeah, it's important to remember that when computer people talk about a bug, what they're meaning is a programming error, as opposed to a virus, which is something completely different. Oh. So a bug and a virus are not the same thing. A bug is just a programming error, a mistake that someone's made along the way.
I think I've got a virus at the moment. Had it for a while. Can't shake it, actually.
Type of virus is a different realm altogether.
Yeah, yeah, you need a doctor. Not
well, I've got one here,
not
actually.
Not like me, no, a real one.
Oh, do I? Yes. Okay, good.
Are you not real?
No.
Are you a sock puppet or something?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Let's talk about iPhones, shall we? There's been a bit of discussion of late about iPhones, so much so that I've been talking emails with people like Adam and others around the place, and we'll clear up a few interesting things as well. I've put some new reading material, some homework from everybody up on the website. And
we had some feedback related to this subject. So
we did.
We'll go on with what you're saying, and then we'll look at the feedback, because I think this will address that.
Okay, let's talk about what currently happens in mobile phone land out there, whether you're with any particular carrier. We're going to talk about the technology. There's three layers at the moment. There's CDMA, there's GSM, and there's 3GSM, which is a similar flavour, different animal, but nonetheless, it's GSM technology. And if you have a look at the Tech Talk Radio website, the top right-hand corner, there is a little link there that says, check out 3G rollout in Australia, and you'll see on your screen what we're looking at here on our screen. And this little graph puts everything into perspective, I believe. Now, we're currently in Australia. We've moved into the world of 3G. That's the big buzzword, the third generation mobile technology. Now, this runs on the 3GSM. According to Telstra, this runs on their 3GSM technology, as opposed to the old 2G or 2.5G. Which is back on GSM. Confused yet? No, yes. Everyone's nodding and shaking. At the very bottom of that graph, there is CDMA. Now, that's what they're turning off in the bush, allegedly, on January the 28th next year. Although there's a bit of a ruckus today, which we'll talk about very shortly.
If the government lets them.
Yeah.
They have to satisfy some tests.
Now, we've put that into perspective now. We've talked about GSM and CDMA. CDMA, going. GSM 2.5G, well, its days are numbered, but there's no closure date for it yet, and everyone's moving to 3G, obviously. The handsets will die out. You'll only find 3G handsets on the market very shortly, because that's where the telcos want you to go. Everyone needs to move to this new third-generation technology.
No point selling handsets for a network that they're going to close.
Exactly.
Close.
Well, yeah. Which will close before 3G will, obviously. Now, the iPhone is a device which runs on the second generation technology. Now, someone asked me the other day, can I bring an iPhone into this country, plug it in, turn it on, and will it work? The answer to that is yes and no. Now, everyone's going, no, well, what sort of an answer is that? Well, yes, it will work on 2G technology, which is currently operating in this country.
It would work on our 2G technology.
If you could activate it, which you can't.
That's the thing. Now, there's the no answer, because all the handsets in the United States are currently locked to AT&T, which is the American carrier. Now, you bring a handset over here, yeah, the technology will support it, but the phone won't. It'll just say, no, I'm not handshaking with that network, I'm not authorised to do that, so go away and don't bother me.
Yeah, it's actually programmed not to connect to other networks, yeah.
Now, I've also done a bit of research. I was wolfing, and I've looked for cracks and hacks and things like that to see if people have managed to get on there.
Yep.
There is one guy that I found that says, oh, yeah, do this, do that. Now, it's not for your, weak-hearted or faint-hearted, you know. You need to be a real hardcore tech boffin to make this crack work. And even still, that crack that was put onto the network has since disappeared. So, and it was SIM-related and this, and that, and the other thing, and all that sort of stuff. So,
and if I remember correctly, even if you do it, you all it does is activate the phone. The other features and not get the phone working.
Is that so?
That's the one I read.
Well, that'd be right, because a lot of the other smarts behind the iPhone is related to what the network can give the phone. Like, you know, we connect to 3G, we get broadband, we get videos, we get this, we get that, we get SMS. That's all network-supported features. The 2G network, from my understanding here, is just not, doesn't quite cut it. Like, the fastest that the iPhone works on 2G is on the Edge technology, which is around about 100 to 130 kilobits per second. You're not going to get much faster out of that. Now, why would you do that when you can go and get an HSDPA handset and get 1.5 megabits per second to your handset, which is what, you know, what we're being sold in this country right now. So, for those of you who want the iPhone, allegedly they're going to release an Australian version in next year, 2008, which will be a carrier which is yet to be announced. We don't know who it is, whether it be Telstra, Optus, Vodafone, or whoever.
Well, Vodafone were talking in the press the other day about complaining that the iPhone didn't support 3G. So it's interesting that they were making the noise. So maybe they
maybe
they're trying to initiate a discussion.
So hopefully that's as clear as mud. Any questions? Feedback, techtalkradio.com.au. If you want to ask us a question, whether we can answer or not, it's another thing. But
we will always do
it. We've done the research, and that's what we've come up to. Yes. That is iPhone as of August 2007.
Looking at some feedback, Andrew asks, did I hear you right on the program before last? Is the GSM system really going to be shut down in January 2008? If so, no one else seems to know about it. Can you please confirm this? I recently bought an HP iPack RW6800 PDA phone and don't want to have to replace it so soon. Andrew, I think that answers your question. GSM is going to be running for at least another couple of years, which is the second generation. The one that they're planning to turn off in around January 2008, if the government lets them, is CDMA.
Yeah.
So there you go. Oh, and the other thing too, just while we're talking acronyms, CDMA, Code Division Multiple Access.
That's it.
The actual technology behind the 3 GSM is still CDMA, but it's wideband, WCDMA.
Yeah, I don't know why Telstra call it that. That's very strange and confusing of them. They've got 3 GSM there on their roadmap, but it's wideband.
Which is completely wrong, isn't
it? It is completely wrong. It's wideband CDMA technology, you're right.
Actually. It is, it's bizarre, but that's what they call it. So, yeah, that's what I'm saying, it's a different animal. They call it GSM, but it's different flavour.
It's not, no.
Yeah. So hopefully that makes it clear for everybody. Don't go and buy one from the States and bring it in. It won't work.
And at the very best, it will work just as a fancy video iPod. It won't actually be a phone.
Well, see, you could use it as an iPod if you don't want to use the telephone.
Well, you still have to activate it, and you still have to unlock it. You still have to crack it, even to use it as a video iPod, yeah.
Because it powers up like a normal phone does and tries to find a network.
The network, yeah.
Now, let's talk about our mate, the bull terrier,
Which
Phil
one?
Burgess.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. He came out. You've heard me in the opener talk about this. I just thought,
what are you going to do? You're going to ship him off to Villawood and you're going to introduce him to this.
He said it's going to be terrorism will win if Telstra don't become the fibre to the all that sort of stuff. They want, you know,
we're going to drag terrorism into it somehow.
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. And I just drew some parallels about him and other doctors, because he's a doctor too, you know.
He is.
And he's involved with SIM cards, and I figured, yeah, there's a good parallel. It's humour. But nonetheless, he was in the news this week, and there's this thing, you know, the bush stuff. You know, you've all heard about it. And
I've heard of the bush, yeah. It's out there somewhere.
That's right. The government Kilsyth, put a tender out. Oh, I'll never live that down, will I?
The government used to live in Kilsyth.
Settle.
Oh, sorry.
Carry on.
The government put a tender out, and they basically more or less offered $600 million to build broadband in the bush.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, this has gone to $1 million sorry, $1 billion, which has come back for the winning contender, which was Elders IXL. Oh, no, it wasn't. Elders Optus. Optus Elders.
Opal.
Opal. Mm. There you go. Good. I'm glad you read the report.
Elders IXL put tin through.
Just to give you a bit of a rundown, Telstra has commenced proceedings in the federal court against Communications Minister Helen Coonan over the government's decision to increase the initial $600 million of funding for the Broadband Connect Infrastructure Fund to almost $1 billion and basically give it to Optus. Now, what happened is Telstra is alleging that the process by which the funding was increased and subsequently awarded to Opel was not fair and equitable, really, and in a lot of respects I agree. How does $600 million turn into a billion?
It's not fair.
Just like that. But nonetheless, the golden rule of business is you've got to be in it to win it, really, don't you? You know, regardless of what sort of, you know, when I put stuff out to tender, when I pitch for a job, you've got to be there and put your ideas and your stuff up there. But nonetheless,
well, that's true, but you've also got to not move the goalpost midstream.
Nah, that's true.
This is it. And Telstra's contention is all over the definition of a word, from what I understand. Their original proposal was that the funding could be used to better help underserved parts of the bush.
Yeah.
And they put in a proposal, and it was knocked on the head, and then the Opal Consortium came up with their proposal, and there's totally different definition of the word underserved, I think, and the government said, yeah, we'll give it to them, and Telstra jumping up and down, hopping mad, so much so that, as Andrew said, they've launched legal action.
Against the minister personally,
by the minister and her office, yes.
Mm. Oh, really? Oh, okay, maybe Kevin Andrews is a good, you know, have a chat.
We'll get
him in. Now, not to be outdone by this, because we have got a federal election coming up, you know, probably, and as I've always tipped, first week of November is my betting day for a federal election. He's got 4 weeks out that he's got to announce it, so what's that, beginning of October we'll probably find out, after OPEC, or before OPEC, whatever. The ALP got involved. They said this accusation, basically what Telstra is saying against the federal government, has already been levelled at the government by the ALP, so they're getting into it as well. Now, let's have a listen. This is what Jeff Booth, who is one of the Telstra directors, had to say about this whole sort of shenanigans.
Well, we've launched this action as a last resort, and the proceedings that we've commenced are really just to get access to information. We want to know what was the process involved in increasing the dollars around the Broadband Communications Infrastructure Fund. We want to know when the aims of the program changed and, you know, what occurred to take this $1 billion from serving people without communications to duplicating existing networks. Certainly we had a very attractive bid on the table, which we thought met the aims of the tender. And then when the tender was released, it had a totally different outcome to the way it was originally couched. We did write to the minister's office, and we haven't had any satisfactory response. This is not something we do lightly.
No, I wouldn't be suing the minister for communications just because I could. I think that'd be sort of detrimental to my cause. But nonetheless, Lindsay Tanner, who's the opposition spokesperson here for the Australian Labor Party, I guess the opposition to Senator Coonan, he had this to say.
John Howard's last-minute broadband plan is falling apart before it's delivered even a single download. The government changed the goalposts in the tender process because it pulled together at the last minute this second-rate broadband proposition in order to counter Labor's initiative. It was all about looking like they're doing something under the pressure of the forthcoming election, and it's now unravelling at a rapid speed.
No. The forthcoming election. Dr. Ron, do you think it's got anything to do with it?
No, it can't have.
No, absolutely not. So anyway, this is what Senator Coonan then had to say in relation to all this.
This is all about building infrastructure, and you cannot build infrastructure on a reflex action between Labor's announcement and the conclusion of the Broadband Connect process. It's been in train for months, as Labor well knows. That is a complete and utter furphy.
Yes, a furphy. Didn't he invent something like, yeah, steam? I remember.
Water carts.
Water carts, that's right. Yes, I remember seeing that whilst I was travelling. So we're bringing a bit of culture back in. But hang on, but wait, there's more.
This bid was established as a competitive process. It was conducted by an independent panel, backed by expert technical and probity advice, and the government utterly rejects Telstra's claim. This is all about building infrastructure, and you cannot build infrastructure on a reflex action between Labor's announcement and the conclusion of the Broadband Connect process. It's been in train for months, as Labor well knows. That is a complete and utter furphy.
Well, election time, here we come. But that's really the goings-on in downtown Canberra. At the moment. But hey, it became a little bit thicker and a little bit faster today as well.
Yes.
Because what
happened today?
Haven't you not seen the news yet today?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay.
No.
Well, basically, Senator Coonan responded to the legal action brought about by Telstra.
Mr. Trujillo rejected this, and so I have now decided that it is appropriate and timely in all the circumstances to have a licence condition put in place. It won't either delay the switch off or impose any additional burden on Telstra if they make good their public commitment.
So is this a bit of tit for tat is what I'm asking now, that Senator Coonan has put a licence in position to stop Telstra turning off CDMA? Am I reading too much into this because of the fact that they're being sued by Telstra?
Yeah, it's monkeys in the cage.
Am I being cynical
here? She got something thrown at her and she's thrown something back.
Now, once again, the consumer, I think, is... We've discussed this last week. There's blue ticks on mobile handsets now, and everyone's having a go at the technology, saying, oh no, the base stations just don't quite cut the mustard for CDMA equivalent or replacement. Now, in a lot of respects, I don't think it's the network, being of a technical person's looking at it here. It's not because of the base station technology. It's because of the handsets. The handsets have always been detrimental, and this is why I think Telstra are trying to put this blue tick on handsets, so that when the people in rural communities are going out there and buying handsets for the new Next G network,
they should pick one that's an appropriate match to the handsets that they used to have. But that's hard to find these days.
Well, hopefully not with this blue tick. This is the whole idea behind what they're doing.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't think it's the network. I think the base stations there. Mark has been a testament to it as well when he's been in the studio.
That's right, yes.
That they're doing they're matching them one for one, and the calls are dropping out the same places. But if they're dropping out differently on, you can't, the unknown quantity, you can't have a controlled environment here. The unknown quantity's got to be the handset by the user. And there's been a lot of complaints. The minister herself said today that there's been a lot of complaints about how the new Next G network doesn't quite work as well as CDMA. But my personal opinion, I think it's handset related. I'm interested if you guys have got any thoughts along that sort of thing, but definitely the handset related type sort of thing. But
I haven't used Next G personally. Graham has, though. You're a big fan.
I like the idea of the network. It's clearly still got its problems and still getting unexplained sudden call dropouts and all that sort of stuff. But I know that the technical people are working on that. And, the handset issue with range in the bush makes a lot of sense.
Well, that's why you have those big antennas on your bull bar of your four-wheel drive / tractor / ute.
So that's right.
It does make
and
sure that you can...
If you go and look at the old CDMA phones, a lot of them have little stub antennas on them or even pull-out extendable antennas.
Mm-hmm.
And the new Next G ones just don't. And it's just obvious.
And with the CDMA, you used to be able to get in-car phones as well, so they had external antennas like what Andrew's saying, and they were designed to be used other than as a small handheld device.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is our email address. forum.techtalkradio.com.au is where you can go and have a chat online about
continue
it.
Continue the discussion.
All this tit-for-tat stuff is just completely bizarre. Don't you find it's just odd? It's very strange. Telstra, the government is still a majority shareholder of Telstra. They're not like more than 50%. They're less than 50% now, but they are still the largest.
A very major shareholder.
They are. They're enormous shareholders. It's very odd.
The tit for tat continues. Jeremy Mitchell, who's also one of the managing directors there for Telstra, came out today and he said this.
Telstra gave a commitment to our customers that the Next G coverage would be the same or better than the old CDMA network. Canberra can impose a licence condition, but it makes no difference to us because our priority is to ensure that we deliver on our promise to customers.
Delivering on the promise. Well,
Telstra are sounding very confident on that point, aren't they?
Well, why shouldn't they be? That the actual technology that they're rolling out is sound.
Yeah, well, that's the strength of those statements, that there's a lot of confidence there in the network. So, I'd read that as very encouraging.
Telstra also, well, actually, Sol came out. There's been a bit of brouhaha with McCackie, who's the one of the main board bosses, and Sol, who runs the company, about fibre to the node. There's been this sort of bluff, I think, is probably a good way of putting it. And Mr. McCackey came out and said, oh, yeah, this is the way we're doing things these days. But nonetheless, I think that's enough of Telstra for the day. I think we'll continue on.
We've explained that one completely.
Now, let's talk about Elton John. You remember him?
From one form of silliness to another.
Oh, yeah, look, you know, I think, hang on, it's... Yeah.
Elton John, a somewhat flamboyant singer and...
This man. This is Elton?
That's him.
Yeah. Well, basically, he doesn't like the internet. He thinks it stifles everybody's creativity and all that sort of stuff.
He doesn't like it.
And he wants it shut down.
I don't like it.
No, that's right. Rocket Man Elton John is wading into waters he doesn't admit to knowing much about. The London tabloid, so you can read that with what you like, said that Sir Elton suggests that the internet is destroying music. The internet has stopped people from going out and being with each other and being creative, wrote Sir Elton.
Hmm.
He goes on to say that he wanted the internet shut down for 5 years to see how the production of music is
shut
affected.
Down.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
Shut down?
I think we should shut the internet down for at least 5 years.
Good luck.
And I'll find something else to do. That'd be really good.
Dear.
Graham, my internet's broken. You say, oh, well, it's not broken.
Elton John, shut it down.
Hey, but hey, if you think about this...
Let's ban the telephone. Let's shut down the telephone networks and make people go out and talk to each other in the street.
If Elton John has his way, it's certainly going to fix Telstra's problems, don't you think?
It will. What are we going to do with all that funding? We'll have to put it into stamp collecting.
Well, yes. And then everything else like iTunes will go down the gurgler. But speaking of iTunes, AC/DC, believe it or not, have spurred on iTunes big time at the moment. One of Australia's most popular rock and roll exports is finally selling into the music digitally, but not on iTunes.
Oh.
Yes. They've sort of... Because iTunes this week has done some amazing things. They cracked 3 billion songs on it. So they've had a bouquet...
They got sued by Eminem.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
Oh, yeah. I heard that about that.
iTunes got sued by Eminem
aren't they chocolates?
No.
Am I showing my age?
The rapper.
Yeah.
Oh, Eminem.
Eminem. Okay.
Yeah, Slim Shady.
Him.
That dude. Okay. Him or his people sued them for apparently not...
They put his music,
on without... authorization or without paying him or some sort of nonsense.
Oh, did they breach copyright? Heaven forbid.
How could that happen? Anyway, sorry, your story.
Well, okay, no, AC/DC have sort of said no to iTunes as well. AC/DC, Verizon Wireless has snagged the exclusive rights to sell the band's entire back catalogue through March 2008. So there you go, no AC/DC for iTunes.
So but where do we go to buy it?
Well, Verizon Wireless, well, they must have a website up there, because they're becoming a dime a dozen, these. So, you know, like, even here in Australia. The Sanity's, HMV's, even Harvey Norman, I think, is now getting in. JB have been
Not to mention Big Pond Music and all of those.
Don't mention Big Pond Music, because Mark's had all sorts of problems downloading music on Big Pond Music. So
it makes so much sense from a distribution model point of view. It's just... There's no overheads, you just have a server somewhere.
No, yep. it just sounds watery. And to use your expletive the other day, it doesn't sound very good, does it?
Yeah, don't have to worry about quality or anything like
that.
No,
that's
any
right.
Old, the same stuff that Kernan and Telstra were flying around before.
Yeah.
Okay, so iTunes cracked 3 billion songs. The milestone came just 6 months after iTunes, Apple's online music download service, surpassed the 2 billion tracks. So they're going forward at an exponential rate. They'll be up to 10 billion by Christmas.
Wow.
I didn't think music was...
That
was me.
No, that was you, sorry. Three billion tracks.
3 billion songs.
So, has there really been 3 billion songs written in the history of man?
Don't forget, 2.5 billion of them are cover versions.
They would be, wouldn't they? They would have to be including podcasts and just all audio recordings and things.
In the first quarter of this year, it ranked the third biggest overall music retailer in the US, behind number one Walmart stores and Best Buy, according to a survey group in the US. There you go.
3 billion songs.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, but it didn't do their share price any good. Their share price plummeted down the day. But I don't think it's on the iTunes back. I think it's on the fact that the iPhone is not what it's cracked up to be, or it's not meeting market expectations or something.
Mm.
But back to the digital side of things, digital takes the lead in the format race. Did you know now that the global entertainment and media sector saw for the first time last year more revenue growth by digital formats than any other competing physical format?
Good.
There you go. So finally, MP3s downloaded off your internet, which Elton wants to shut down, has now surpassed the buying a CD in the local shop.
That's good.
You're all speechless, aren't you?
Yeah, I think that's good. And also, probably other formats as well. Is it talking about just music or video as well?
It's talking predominantly about CDs and audio CDs and things like
that.
Yeah,
okay, that's good.
So,
and hopefully audio cassette tapes and things as well.
Audio CDs digital, or should I not mention that at this point?
No, I wouldn't mention that. Okay. No, they mean digital online, I think, as opposed to real life.
Dr. Ron, do you want to recap what you were talking about in the news before tonight, about the PlayStation 3 and digital tuners before we listen to Adam tonight
yes.
from the couch?
There was a gentleman from Sony Computer Entertainment in New Zealand who let slip or hinted at the possibility that they may be making a digital TV tuner plug-in for the PS3 in the not-too-distant future, which is the DVB-T standard.
So this would turn your PlayStation, in, as well as being all the other things that
as
it already
well
is.
As well as being a games console and a Blu-ray high-def disc player.
And a media center to play your video files on.
Yes. Into
it's now going to be your personal video digital video recorder as well.
A digital television receiver as well.
I've got a feeling Adam's going to have something to say about this.
Oh, he will. He will, trust me. Yes, just some feedback from the website. AT&T ordered the phones. AT&T ordered the phones to their spec from Apple, so we should not any issues with AT&T. Oh, yeah, good. Okay, sorry, that's just someone there from Randall. Hello, Randall.
Hi, Randall.
Randall.Irvin.
Hello. AT&T have ordered.
It's a real worry.
The iPhone.
His email. His email address is at mac.com. Is that something to be worried about? I kid you not.
No bias
let's,
there.
Let's go and have a bit of a listen on the couch, shall we? Here's Adam Turner for this evening.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Apparently being a games console, media centre and Blu-ray player still isn't enough for the PlayStation 3. Now it wants to be your personal video recorder as well. Around March next year, Sony expects to introduce a digital TV tuner add-on, turning the PlayStation 3 into a personal video recorder, Sony revealed last week. The PS3 wants to be all things to all men. But is Sony getting too greedy in its attempts to own your lounge room? Personal video recorders are mission-critical devices, and as media center PC owners will tell you, they behave best when left undisturbed. Is it really practical to use the one device for gaming, watching movies, and recording television? If you're single, you probably think the answer is yes, but if you share a lounge room with your family, you know the answer is no. You want to record your favourite show, your better half wants to watch a movie, and the kids want to play games. Who's going to win? I can tell you right now, won't be you. A PlayStation 3 PVR might be a nice novelty, but it's not very practical, unless Sony expects people to buy a second PS3. We all know games console hardware is sold at a loss, with the money made back on games and services. So why would Sony put a digital TV tuner in the PlayStation 3? If you're watching or recording television, then you're not playing games, listening to CDs, or watching a movie on Blu-ray or plain old DVD. Sony has a finger in all of these pies, but if you're just watching the Idiot Box, then you're not putting extra dollars into Sony's coffers. Or are you? It doesn't take much imagination to think about the possibilities a TV-enabled PS3 opens up for Sony. Monitoring your viewing habits, monitoring your ad-watching habits, monitoring your ad-skipping habits, it's all precious data to both Sony and interested third parties. The promise of a Sony movie download service is designed to get more PS3 owners connected to the internet, which obviously gives Sony access to the supercomputer they've snuck into your lounge room in the guise of a games console. Microsoft has already painted the idea of a TiVo for advertisements, which would insert fresh advertisements into old recordings on personal video recorders to ensure you see today's ads even if you're watching a recording from last week. You can be sure Sony has similar ideas, and the PlayStation 3 is the perfect delivery platform. Sony has obviously learned by now that if you don't give people what they want, they'll just hack your devices and do it anyway. Apple, on the other hand, relies on this, realizing that if they release limited products that are easily hackable, like the Apple TV, people can add whatever features they want, but then Apple doesn't have to support those features because they're not officially there. Sony knows if it doesn't add a digital TV tuner to the PS3, then someone else will. By adding a digital TV tuner itself, Sony assures it remains in full control over you and your console. Games consoles are all about controlling and owning your lounge room, and Sony isn't selling the PlayStation 3 just for your viewing pleasure.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
Talk Radio.
Microsoft is going to clarify its open source plans. You remember we had them on the show recently and talked about Open Office XML, OOXML and all that sort of stuff.
Office Open XML.
It's an interesting web of which they read. But Microsoft clarified its plans to seek open source certification for its shared source licenses last Wednesday, saying it will submit for approval only the two licenses that allow source code to be used on any platform. So they must have a few others up their sleeve, but that's the whole idea between open source, isn't it? Anyone can see it, anyone can use it, and it's free.
That's the idea.
Last time I looked, anyway.
There is a format that's been widely used for some time, and Microsoft have decided to invent their own open format as well.
Yeah.
But interesting, we had Sarah Bond from Microsoft, I think, on the program, didn't we, a few weeks back, talking about the new Office suite?
Yes. We're trying to hear the other side of the story, too, from the Open Office, well, the other, sort of their opposition, I guess. Just trying to wrangle a bit of an interview, a bit mic shy at the moment. But nonetheless, we'll get there down the track very shortly, hopefully. Okay, printer emissions can risk your health. Graham, yes. You had a bit of a delve into this. Now, what's the deal with your average laser printer giving you palpitations?
Well, what happened was that there was a research study being done up at Queensland University of Technology, and they were looking at fine particles in the air. And they set up their equipment in a typical office, and they were expecting to find at 9 a.m. and on the Monday morning, or just before, that all the diesel particles would start coming in through the air conditioning system from the street, and the fine particle counts would go up. And what they found was that the particle count inside went up a lot faster than it did outside, and they went looking for the reason. And it turns out that some laser printers, when they print, they set out these very fine particles of toner into the air.
Well, it's pretty easy to get on your skin when you delve into the back there. And
yeah, but even when they're just running normally, these very fine particles of toner can escape from the printer and get into the air. And because they're such tiny particles these days, with like microfine technology to do very high resolution and very high quality printing, these particles get right down into your lungs, a bit like cigarette smoke, and do a little bit of damage.
Now, to talk about laser printing 101, Graham.
Yeah.
How does a laser printer work? You actually have the toner.
Yep.
And it's heated, doesn't it? Cure it to the paper, if you like.
Okay. You generate an image by having a photosensitive drum and writing to it with a laser. That's where the laser comes into.
Right.
Where the light shines on it, it becomes conductive and doesn't pick up any toner. Where the light didn't shine on it, it transfers the toner from the little toner bin to the little drum, and then transfers it off the drum onto the paper. And that's done electrostatically. In other words, with static electricity. So
there are very fine particles of toner.
The finer you make the particles of toner, the higher quality the image.
Yes.
And then once these very fine particles are on the paper, there's three different types of particle embedded in the toner. There's stuff that's very black, which is mainly carbon. The stuff that's magnetic to make it easy to move about and convince it to do what you want it to do. And the stuff that's plastic that at the back end of the photocopier gets melted onto the paper to stick it all down.
Right.
Were you a photocopier technician in a past life or something?
Yes.
Graham's repaired.
So you know, you learn something every day.
Graham's repaired printers for years.
I've been repairing printers and stuff, yeah, and a laser printer is just the back end of a photocopier.
Well, this bit of laser printer, according to, and please excuse me, Professor Lydia Morawska from the Queensland University of Technology, she said, potential effects range from respiratory irritation, to cardiovascular system and cancer type sort of thing. So there's
so you can get some serious effects.
Yeah, yeah. So there's another reason to go bubble jet, I guess, really, isn't it?
Well,
and get ink all over your fingers. They'll find something wrong with the ink that they use in bubble jets one day, shortly.
Or to choose a laser printer that doesn't spray its toner around the place, because there are some...
Are there some that do that?
Well, yeah, in the research, she's come up with a table of the various different printers and how much of these very fine particles they emit, and some are a lot worse than others.
I wonder what spurred someone on to actually study these sort of things.
Well, they tripped over it by accident. Yeah, they were looking for fine particles from other sources and got this unexpected result.
What's this
result.
Black stuff?
That's right, yeah. So, as with a lot of science, they were looking for something and found something quite unexpected and went searching for the reason why.
Mm, and they found it, obviously.
Very good basic science, yeah. Mm. It's great stuff.
Just a couple of emails before we talk about Dr. Ron's trip to the synchrotron. If you read all your emails, Andrew, you'll find out. We're just sorting a few out here. Randall. Hello, Randall. He's listening to us from on the shoutcast on the stream from North Queensland. First-timer. Loved the photography show, too. Yeah, we did, too. He was a bit of a hoot, that Michelle Black. But I just can't work out. He's a guy with a girl's name. But nonetheless.
Have you managed to get him to take a photo with his telephone yet? He was violently resisting.
I can understand that. Too.
He was. But yeah, thanks, Randall. Thanks for that. And yes, I did make head nor tail of your. He also says, "What's a driver?" He's obviously a Mac user. So.
Oh yes, a point well made.
Yes, Macintoshes do have drivers, but users never have to encounter them.
Yes.
That's one of the big advantages of Macintosh, because the Macintosh have control of the hardware as well as the software, so they don't have all these driver issues.
Yeah, now Mark Diggins, he's listening to us tonight, obviously on the stream. He can't resist having a bit of a listen. Mark sent us an email.
Hi, Mark.
CDMA was developed by Qualcomm, who are based in the US. WCDMA still has links to Qualcomm, but was developed by the Europeans as a next step for GSM. Yep, that probably explains your question, Dr. Ron, as to how it all
3GSM.
Blends in together. Oh. He says, I think Telstra like to call it 3GSM so as not to confuse it with CDMA network, which is the one which is shutting down.
Yeah, so instead of confusing it with CDMA, we'll confuse it with GSM.
Yes, exactly.
Crikey.
Go Telstra.
No, I was going to say go Elton. As you say, the over-the-air technology is WCDMA, which is very similar to CDMA, as you would expect.
Yeah.
Suffice to say that, he sent another email in down the track. He says, 60,000 kilometres driven, because this is what he does. He goes out there and compares horses for courses here, and he's been up in the back of Queensland and all other places around the countryside. 60,000 kilometres driven, all analysed, and fixes have been identified where applicable. Ericsson working on implementing fixes within the next 2 to 3 months. So there you go. Hopefully that sort of explains the CDMA types of thing. Now, while we're on the subject of radiation and particles of toner-related things, Dr. Ron, you went to the place where it's a mecca for shooting particles in round circles down the road here from where we broadcast in Clayton, Australia, now has its first synchrotron.
The synchrometron,
that's right. I didn't actually go there, but I just did some reading up about it because it was a news item we talked about a few episodes ago, but it caught my interest.
Building it for a while. Is it
I have.
Now?
It is. It's finished.
In less than half an hour, can you tell us what a synchrotron is, apart from the fact that they shoot atoms at things, don't they?
They do. It's designed to be a microscope, and we'll hear about it in just a few moments, but it's essentially a very, very, very large microscope, the size of a football field, and it helps people scientists to see things at a molecular level. So it was opened last week, and it featured prominently in the mainstream media.
All right, let's go to the videotape and see what you had to say.
Last week saw the official opening of Australia's first synchrotron in Melbourne's eastern suburb of Clayton. Unveiled by Victoria's new Premier, John Brumby, the synchrotron has been likened to a $220 million microscope the size of a football field. Synchrotrons allow scientists to conduct the latest medical and industrial research by producing beams of light 1 million times brighter than the sun and creating X-rays that can be used to look at molecules which are too small to be seen with a conventional microscope. When the synchrotron accelerates electrons to almost the speed of light, the electrons are deflected through magnetic fields, creating extremely bright light, or synchrotron light. The synchrotron light is channeled down beam lines to experimental workstations where it's used for research. There are 43 synchrotrons around the world. Most scientifically developed countries have their own synchrotron, including Japan, Germany, Sweden, Brazil, India, and now Australia. Until now, Australian scientists have been forced to travel offshore to conduct scientific experiments using synchrotrons. In June 2001, after many proposals, feasibility studies and recommendations from Australia's scientific and research communities, the Victorian government announced plans to build a synchrotron right here in Melbourne. Construction began in 2003, and now the dream of many Australian scientists has become a reality. The Australian Synchrotron Science Director, Professor Robert Lamb, spoke with the ABC's Kelly Wilson last week.
Caters for pretty much all scientists in Australia. So everyone that you could imagine, anything with an ologist on the end, a geologist, a biologist, or even a chemist.
Now that Australian scientists have the ability to analyse molecules, the machine can be used in all sorts of different applications. The synchrotron will be used to research more powerful computer chips, monitor pollution, make stronger building materials, and even make changes to the way food tastes. Last week, the CSIRO said Australia's new synchrotron could even assist in the fight to save the Tasmanian devil from the outbreak of facial tumour disease, currently decimating devil populations. CSIRO's Dr. Jeff Church.
Try to detect small changes in the structure of the hair that would indicate the onset of the disease.
Now, if you think a synchrotron beamline is just what you need to complete your PhD or further your industrial or scientific research project, simply put your case to the National Scientific Advisory Committee. You can do this online. Visit www.synchrotron.vic.gov.au. This is Dr. Ron, reporting for Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Very good, Dr. Ron. So are you actually going down there to do your own research now? Is this the plan? Sorry.
That's okay. To maybe to help production for Tech Talk or something to improve our audio quality. I don't know.
It's a very bright light they speak of.
It is. It's extremely bright. It's a huge machine too. It's massive. If you have a look at aerial photographs of it.
Oh, you've been to Google, have you?
Yeah. Well, a lot of the mainstream media outlets have got articles about it and photos there. The thing that impressed me though was that so much brain drain, scientific brain drain, is now going to be curtailed, I guess.
Instead of having to go overseas, but everybody will now come to Clayton.
Exactly right. And especially, it's great for Melbourne because scientists all around the country will be able to come
It'll be the place to be,
come here to do their research.
You should be in PR for the state government. The place to be. For those of you who aren't familiar with us, we here in Victoria actually got a new premier during the course of the week because the other one decided he'd had enough.
He did.
He threw up his hands in disgust and said, I'm out of here.
And the new one likes the synchrotron, so it's one of his pet projects. I think it'll be, the technological side of things will be pretty good down here for a little bit with Mr. Brumby there. Let's just have a bit of a quick chat before we take a break about, remember last week we spoke about Acer slamming Vista and all that sort of stuff?
Yes, for their laptops.
Back and putting XP on XP. Some of the laptops, yeah.
Yes, well, not to be outspoken, Microsoft have fought back. It's a bit like Telstra versus the federal government or something. Acer Chief Gianfranco Lanzi has blasted the arrival of Microsoft's Office Windows as a huge disappointment to the whole industry, but locals say his tirade is out of tune with what's happening in Australia. The chief of the computer maker lamented that Vista had failed to ignite PC sales, but the local PC market players said the arrival of Vista coincided with a healthy start to the year for sales in Australia, spurred along by consumers buying laptops. Now, the question needs to be asked here. Can you buy a laptop with XP on it these days?
Yes, you can.
Good. Well, there you go. So the consumers are actually buying Vista. Is that what you read into that?
You do have a choice in a lot of places, don't you?
You do get a choice, yeah. A lot of people are getting talked into getting Vista when they probably don't really need it.
Mm.
But, you do get a choice. If you look in the market for a laptop, you can certainly have your preference one or the other.
I bought two laptops the other day. Both of them had Vista, and both of them work exceptionally well, despite the fact that I finally worked out how to deactivate all the security processes.
Oh.
Like, you know, you're going to do a Firefox update and it says, bah, bah, sorry, you don't have authentication, or you have to run this in anyway.
Some of those things are actually quite good. They're a little bit annoying because we're used to things being so easy, but they're good at protecting your system.
It is, but as the IT guru in our organisation, when people come down, I just now go into security policy editor and turn it off, so... Sorry, Graham's just cringing in the corner over there. Because I don't want people to go, why can't I do this? But nonetheless, it's a very stable, or I found it to be a very stable, very good operating system, and it's a good step towards the new generation.
This is rather nice, but you must run it on a really good machine, and you must throw a ton of RAM at it.
So now we're saying that Acer, was it Acer? Acer, don't make really good machines? Well, no, you're not saying that, but that's what I read between the lines.
Well,
that's
no.
What we do here. Conspiracy theory.
Maybe there's different segments of the market, but yeah, no, don't try and run Vista on a machine that's got 512 meg of RAM in it.
No. It'll buy a new machine to run your Vista on.
Yeah, that's right.
Are you going to leave
Vista? Put 2 gig of RAM in it.
Are you going to leave Vista on these machines?
Yeah. You know. Oh, there's no reason to move back. Mm. It's for what they're doing at the moment, they're not doing any... You know, everything which they needed to do, which was basically word processing, emailing, and you know, general today-to-day office stuff, they're fine.
And bear in mind that when XP came out, everybody hated that too, and now we can't live without it. So
we haven't got much choice these days.
Give Vista a bit of a chance. I think it'll come into its own as the hardware catches up.
I've got an Acer laptop.
Have you?
Yeah, it's running.
But it's not running Vista.
No, it's running Ubuntu.
Oh, there you go.
Sorry about that.
Hey, but let's talk. Your Ubuntu laptop can print to my printers or the other through the internet. This is something we were playing around with during the course of the weekend.
Tell us about your internet printers.
This is not on the rundown. We should move on.
How good's that? You're going to start printing URLs on your business cards instead of fax numbers.
Absolutely not. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We'll be back with more in a moment.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Andrew McComb.
I think what people have on their homepage tells you a lot about what the person's like.
Dr. Ron.
In the past, we've talked about ways in which we can...
string them along.
Manage. I think is the corporate expression, Mark.
Graham Callaghan.
Don't open things that you're not expecting, even if they do appear to come from somebody you know.
Mark Diggins.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
It's $5 a month. 10 megabytes.
Oh, ouch.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy, it's Charlie. It's child's play. Oh, it's child's play.
Podcasting is so easy because my little sister Emily can do it.
Step one, download and install some podcatching software like iPodder, Thunderbird or iTunes. Step two, find the address of the Tech Talk Radio podcast feed on the Tech Talk Radio website. Step 3, copy and paste the feed address into your podcatching software, and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever, and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn on a train...
But that is totally pussy.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
If nothing, we have a bit of fun in here. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan, and Mark Diggins out there on the sub-ether sending emails, which anyone's welcome to do, actually. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Well, on air, actually, that's the spam filter free one. We don't publish like that. Or you can go to the website, too, and follow the feedback form, I think it is. You can type in there on the form, and it comes through to us as well. Very good way of getting feedback through us. Get rid of the spam filters.
Have a look at the blogs. Have a look at McBlog.
Oh, yeah, you can have a look at our blogs. They're all linked off the front page of Tech Talk Radio.
That's it.
Everyone has a bit of a rant from time to time.
Those of us who have blogs.
Are you going to get a blog, Graham?
No.
Oh, okay. I said that once upon a time.
We're all individuals, I'm not.
Yes. We're all individuals. It's very therapeutic.
Is it? Unless you vent.
Yeah.
About anything.
And you can, depending on
your... Mine might get repetitive.
Depending on your blogging software, you can save what you're ranting about and go away and come back a couple of days later and finish ranting and
finish a rant.
And then click publish.
Rants on hold.
Yeah, rants on hold.
No, I did that the other day when I was on hold with Engine.
Oh.
Well, yes. I was sitting there typing the blog. I was furious at the time. I'm going to blog this while I'm talking about it. 52 minutes on hold. Thank you, Engine, very much.
So you would have had the blog. Yeah, that was great. You would have had the blog post up there and published by the time the call got answered.
Thank you very much, Engine. Click. Publish. wasn't quite that expedient, but yes, it wasn't bad. Mm. Shall we talk about ad systems threatening privacy? Australian privacy groups have warned that the proliferation of behavioural targeting on the internet could breach privacy guidelines. It's expected that five of the six biggest Australian internet publishers, Census, 9MSN, Fairfax News, Digital Media and Yahoo, will have behavioural targeting in operation on their sites within 6 months. But they're not expected to reveal the practice to users. So watch out.
What does that mean? What's behavioural targeting?
Well, when you rock up on their site, it'll register your IP address, because most people now have static IP addresses. I'm assuming it'll be static, unless they do cookies.
It's easy to do with cookies, because if you have your ads on all the pages that are relevant, you can tell with the cookies.
And then you might go to Google or one of these big trust census to be behind it, and those sort of guys. And if you go there and use their search engine and you type for blue widgets, and then you go to another search engine and type blue widgets, people will finally work a bit of a pattern out, saying that, hey, Dr. Ron, you're interested in blue widgets.
So it'll throw advertising at you.
Exactly. Ah. Exactly. So it's going to move away from searches that are potentially not based on search quality, which is what Google stands for. That's why Google's not mentioned in this list. But nonetheless, I think that's really where we're going to end up in the not-too-distant future, that there's no such thing as privacy online anymore. You will be targeted by your search queries, especially if you use these dodgy ones like Census. They had one. What was it called? The search engine that fell off the face of the earth. Do you remember what it was called?
No.
They made one up for Australians or something like that. And
the ads with the olgas and things, yeah.
Oh, I can't remember. But anyway, that was a really good one.
It's very Minority Report, isn't it? Have you seen that movie?
No.
With the one with Tom Cruise, and it's set in the future. And as he walks past billboards, they're electronic, and they say, hey, and they call the character by name. You know, you haven't been to this holiday destination for some years now. Yes. You should come back again, and it electronically knows who he is and targets the advertising.
That could be embarrassing for certain members of the community walking past if people get targeted on what they search for online.
Well, yeah. Just make sure you log out of Google before you search for things that you...
Well, no, Google's not the issue.
No, it's not the issue, is it? No, it's the other search.
I wouldn't be at all surprised if Google are into it as well, but,
yeah, but then
on Google, you can be fairly certain that it'll appear on the right-hand side under sponsored links.
Well, that's the point, isn't it?
And the actual links in the clear part of the page will still be genuine.
Yes. So the Australian Privacy Foundation expects ad stalking will become a flashpoint once consumers are aware of it.
Ad stalking, that's the buzzword. I like that. Ad stalking.
Have you been stalking? There's laws against stalking, isn't there? But maybe not electronically.
Wow.
Maybe there is. Who knows? Now, you're a bit of a games console man, Dr. Ron. Did you know that the US US Federal Customs Agents have raided more than 30 businesses and homes in 16 states looking for devices that allow pirated video games to play on Wii's, PlayStation 2s, and Xboxes.
So if you've chipped your PlayStation...
What does it mean if you chip your PlayStation, Graham?
That doesn't mean dropping it from a height and taking a nick out of the corner, does it?
No, what it means is you replace a particular component inside that stops their cop... Let's go back a step. When they're produced, they have a facility in them that knows whether or not a disc is genuine. And if it's a non-genuine disc, even if it's got the right content on it and the game on it, it won't play. And chipping it removes that feature from the console.
It's a big industry, though, isn't it?
So I can't tell the difference between a genuine one and a copied one, yeah.
A lot of... I've been to what they call swap meets here in town, where that's like a computer trade.
The computer market, yeah.
And you see these... You know, people in the corner with their soldering irons doing mod chippy things or whatever. Is that what they're doing?
They're taking one little IC out and putting a different one in, and
that way you can play copied games.
That's right.
On your console. I have a PS2.
Yeah,
it's not chipped, so all the games that we have are genuine.
Genuine
games. Yeah, bought from.
You don't have to be worried about the feds knocking down your door at 3 a.m.
I hope they don't, but if they do, they won't find
anything.
Yes. Andrew?
You'll be going, James, what are you doing here?
Come on now, steady. We have all sorts of people listening to our program.
We do indeed. We do indeed. Well, that's interesting. Yes, illegal chips and other devices used on gaming consoles violate the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which everyone's very familiar with in this room, of 1998. Sales of counterfeit or illegally obtained games cost the industry around about US $3 billion a year globally, not including internet piracy, the estimated Software Associated Trade Group estimates. So there you go, that's from a report in Australian IT.
Yes, it's a very annoying little area of the law where it's actually, if you own a copy of the game or CD or whatever it happens to be, it's not illegal to copy it, but it is illegal to have the technology to circumvent the copy protection that's on it.
Oh, you're going to go into this awful grey area of copyright again, aren't you? But yes, you're right.
It's such a stupid, annoying little bit of law.
It is, but even Australia now, it's now legal to make a backup copy of a CD, isn't it? As in an audio CD.
It's legal to do it. It,
yeah.
But it's not legal to crack the copy protection on the disc to do it.
You work that out.
Very strange. Of course, be aware as well, if you mod chip your PlayStation or your games console, you will almost certainly void any manufacturer's warranty that you may have otherwise had.
Yes.
Does it matter, do you think, in this day of disposable electronics?
My personal opinion is no. I think that the device is, if you have it for more than a few days or a couple of weeks and it's running fine, you're not going to have any problems with it at all. But just be wary. If you're wanting to take it back after 18 months because of the drive fails or something happens, Sony or whoever it is going to look at it and go, no, I don't think so.
No. Do you routinely take the covers off new devices just to see what's inside them?
No, I went through a phase where I used to just pull things apart for the sake of it and put them back together again, but no, I don't do that
anymore.
What about yourself?
Occasionally.
Occasionally. You've got to be careful. You used to have a roll of those stickers, didn't you? The void
yeah,
the remove
yeah,
stickers.
That's right.
Yeah, so you just, if you have to break a sticker by, removing a screw, you just pull a new sticker off the reel and put it back on.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. See, we know all the tricks here.
Did you actually ever have to return a product having done that? And did you get away with it, is the question.
I don't recall ever having to, no.
But I must admit, consumer electronics these days is pretty darn good.
Yeah, usually it'll fail fairly quickly or not fail.
Yeah, just outside the warranty period normally is when it fails, isn't it? I've noticed that to be a fact.
The other thing to do is if you break a warranty sticker, just clean it up with a bit of mineral turpentine.
That's right, clean it off, so there's, don't leave the
void there.
Yeah, it was never there, that's right. That's much better.
No. What about the nail polish that they put on the screws?
Do you
have to go down to the local, get your missus to go down and pick up a bottle of orange nail polish or something so you can whack it back on the screws?
There's nail polish in the workshop for that reason.
Well, Dr. Ron's workshop in particular, if you've heard the promos.
101 ways to dodge the system, void your warranties and... Yes, circumvent. All that.
The in jokes are flying thick and fast here in the Tech Talk Radio studio tonight. We apologise about that.
We won't lead you astray.
Online papers are overtaking 9MSN. Now, this is another interesting report I came across during the course of the week. The reign of PBL's media, 9MSN, as Australia's most popular online news site, is over. And not about time, too. I just digress here. This is called Wilfing on the Radio.
Yeah.
But you ever been to the 9MSN site, and have you ever found any information
I've been
that's
to it
relevant?
Quite frequently. It happens all the time before I've actually got to change my
I know.
Default start page on my web browser.
Graeme, you really do need a blog. There's a lot of things you need to get off your chest. But, yes.
But 9MSN's site would have to be the most frustrating site. It's not user-friendly. It's just tabloid, but no, I guess that's what it's
page
all about.
Page one
really,
has got so much junk on it. It takes 3/4 of an hour to load over.
Yeah, go to abc.net.au any day, let me tell you.
Absolutely.
They celebrated their 75th anniversary during the course of the weekend. Let me tell you, on their $850 odd million that they get a year for the whole ABC, that's the whole radio, the whole television, the whole shooting match, they do a damn fine job, and especially in their online presence. No one podcasts or does anything anywhere near the level of what the good old auntie does. They just do the most amazing job. So,
I
think from an expat point of view, you wouldn't feel like an expat these days. You can now listen to any station, any program, anything you like. At any time you like, that's the joy of podcasting. We should do a podcasting show again one day.
They've got a lot of streaming running as well. You can listen live if that's what tickles your fancy.
It's like us. Hello, speaking of streaming, sorry, just talk amongst yourselves while I click this email. This is Darren from Manila. He's listening to us on the stream. There you go.
Hey, Darren.
So, you know, it's the same technology, the same principle. G'day, Darren. Yeah, he's over there in Manila and he's listening to us on the stream.
It's good to know.
Where were we? Online papers. Yes, we're talking about 9MSN, how they've fallen off the radar in a certain degree.
Yeah, good.
Traditional newspaper mastheads continue to experience surging internet traffic at the expense of the broad-based portals, which means that you know, newspapers like The Age, the Sydney Morning Herald, all those sort of guys are now actually winning back the credibility over the Yahoo 7s and 9MSNs and all that sort of stuff, which rightly they should be, because I don't believe they're actually true.
I think you've hit the nail
portals.
On the head, though, with the credibility issue. Yeah, people are going to go, if you've always read The Age or whatever the paper is in your area, then you're going to go to The Age website when you want your news. It makes sense. You're going to get reports from the same reporters that you know about. You're going to be able to read the same columns. It's all going to be there, and it's going to be what you're used to getting.
Home pages are very important to that, because I think a lot of people, I know most people who I work with actually have a newspaper as or a media organisation as a homepage, but I can't tell you anyone who has not an MSN. I'm sorry.
Yeah, only people that haven't changed it either through lack of motivation or lack of knowledge who just use the default one. And I think that's the only thing that's driving the popularity of 9MSN is that people don't bother changing it.
Not wanting to sound like an ad for the ABC or anything like that, but have you had a look at their video on demand stuff? That keeps evolving every time I go there, and there is nothing that you can't find there now. Nearly all their shows, are available for download. Now, I don't know whether poor old Darren in Manila can see them over there because of the fact that they're destined for the Australian market. But in a lot of respects, they do it. Oh, you can find it. All the news and things like that. And they're also branching out into this new 3G stuff as well, so you can actually see their news services on your little handset, should you choose to want to watch it whilst driving down the street.
Absolutely.
All right. Red Hat. You're a Red Hat person.
I was.
Red Hat. What do you mean, what? Have you seen the light?
No. I don't use the Red Hat branded products anymore because the... I use the Fedora, which is sponsored by Red Hat.
Okay, because apparently they're delaying desktop software. Software maker Red Hat said it delayed the release of a version of its Linux software for personal computers that will compete with Microsoft Windows operating system. Red Hat Global Desktop Linux, scheduled to be released in August, would not be available until September, according to their product manager.
Okay.
I'm not sure why, but Red Hat had said in its May that it was working with Intel on desktop software, which it said would have features comparable in Windows, including a wide range of programs, and would be sold with a one-year subscription to security updates. Is this the end of all the free stuff, do you think? Are we going to sort of start moving into proprietary areas?
I wouldn't think so.
Being a Red Hat Linux person. Well, you both are. How's your Ubuntu, Dr. Ron?
It's going well. Now, I go on, Graham, because I agree with your... Short answer, but please explain.
Short answers, but
well,
let's be verbose.
I think that there's room for both. In the Linux world, there's going to be people who will be happy to pay for a product and get the support, and there's going to be other people who are going to be happy to go with an unsupported or a community-supported product. But the two products are going to have the same features because of the nature of open source. If Red Hat add a feature to an open source program, the open source license compels them to release that code back into the community, so the community version can have that feature as well. That's the way open source works. So the advantage of going with Red Hat, and there's nothing wrong with that, I've used Red Hat paid products before, is that you get support and you get a product that you know you've got someone behind. If something goes wrong, you can go back to them and say, hey, this isn't right. Whereas with a community-supported product, there's no one to go back to. That's the trade-off. The actual content of the product is going to be pretty much the same.
Excellent. Well, I guess that's what we're looking at these days in the land of computing, really, isn't it? We've got open source and closed source. Open source, which is being, obviously, through Red Hat, Linux, and those sort of guys.
And just because it's paid with Red Hat doesn't mean it's not open source. It's still
Google,
open source.
Google, very much behind open source. And then you've got the closed source guys, which are really the
Microsoft
and Apple.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's the us and them scenarios. But I don't know. I think open source will probably win down the end of the track because there's more and more people cotton on to what they do and how they do it. And I guess it's just that fear factor of changing, isn't it?
Both around for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, but I think at the end of the day, open source will slowly
Yeah, so, well, this desktop market's a critical thing. It's one thing that Linux hasn't done very well is be an actual user's desktop. I don't have any of my end-user customers running Linux on their workstations. I have lots of customers who have Linux stuck in the back room, in the cupboard, on their servers, but not on their workstations that users use.
Mm.
And this is where Red Hat are pushing towards.
The two can coexist side by side very, very well.
Oh, also, absolutely.
Yeah, you can have in the back office.
Well, you do say, it, don't you?
Graham, you have Linux-based servers. And
when you connected to my printers the other night, one was on a Windows box and one was on your Ubuntu box.
Linux boxes connected this without any problems whatsoever. We didn't have to straight away, but the Windows one was hunting around for drivers, had to insert disks, had to download executables and install stuff and muck around. We got them both going, but the Linux one just worked, click straight away like that, which was quite funny, actually.
Yeah. You've confused Randall again. You've used the word driver in a sentence.
Oh, Randall, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's
Mac,
it's
Mac
a PC thing.
Yeah,
bear
exactly.
with us.
Yep. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to the last bit of the show this evening. Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan and myself, Andrew McComb, at the panel. We'll be brief here because this is what happens this time of night. We run out of time. just briefly, there's another email in from Randall. Randall's obviously worked out how to use the Tech Talk Radio feedback form, which is sensational. You can too. It's quite easy. Just visit the website. He writes, if Dell, HP or any big supplier was to offer Linux, Red Hat or similar as the installed system, then he'd be there. Now Graham, you reckon they do?
I'm pretty sure Dell does, at least.
Yeah. I'm sure Dell does.
I'm not sure which particular brand of Linux they use, but I'm sure they use one of them.
Mm.
We'll do a bit of research on that. We might talk about that next time.
Okay, botnets. What's a botnet? Everyone knows. You've got a zombie. A zombie at home where they rampant little creatures that sends... I've seen your dog, but... it's Elvis.
Come on.
Ructo, your dog. But yes. What happens for poor unsuspecting people from time to time is that their system, their PC, maybe even their Mac these days or something, will have a bit of rogue software put on them by visiting an unscrupulous website or accidentally clicking on a link you shouldn't have. And what happens is it becomes a zombie. It sits there and waits for some big brother to send an email message to it to say, here, send out these 10 billion spams.
A ready, set, go message, or it waits for a time when the system clock is at a certain date and time and it starts sending messages. But wouldn't have a big impact from one machine, but from 100,000 machines, it has a big impact.
Trend Micro have developed some software for hosting companies and things like that so that they can actually, more than point probably ISPs, a security tool that identifies botnets and blocks attacks from these zombie networks.
Oh, okay. So it looks for lots of machines sending out the same sort of traffic all of a sudden.
I suspect so,
and
then block them.
That's really clever.
The Botnet Identification Service, one of three hosted security applications that are part of Trend Micro's Secure Cloud line, deals with the growing botnet problem with real-time identification of command and control centers that operate zombie networks. The product is targeted at ISPs and educational institutions. There you go.
Yeah, good idea.
That's not bad. And let me tell you, the spam at the moment is something shocking. If I get one more medical thing that comes in, and what is it with people that are just like sending PDFs now? Have you got any of those? You probably don't, Dr. Ron, because you're
Yes, I do. I've had a dozen in the last week.
A blank email with a PDF in it. I've never opened one. I don't even know what they are.
An ad. Yeah.
Oh, is that what it is? They're just an ad. Yeah, good. Because they're maybe...
Your spam assassin should kill them on the head.
Spam assassin? Yeah, no, I don't actually have spam assassin.
Oh.
I use other unscrupulous things that people swear and curse about and all sorts of things like that. Saying, why can't I get an email through to you? What do you use? Do you use Spam Assassin?
Spam Assassin running on the mail server, so that's the server side spam.
Yeah, but not everyone runs a server. We're not like us.
True. Oh, but your ISP should.
Your ISP should
offer it.
Yep.
And also I use Thunderbird as an email client, and that's got excellent junk mail handling.
And so does Outlook 2003 and above has very good junk mail handling as well.
Now, I disagree with that. I'm so over my Outlook's junk handling thing. It's There's this one at the moment, and I don't want to give them any sort of virtue, but every second email I get is one from these spam things. Now, I've created, I said, no, this is junk mail in my Outlook, and it just ignores it completely.
Next time they have a monthly update to your rules in your Outlook 2003 that comes out with the Windows updates.
Yeah.
And you might find that if there's been one that's been pretty bad for a few weeks, that it might come out as in the next update that it catches it.
Okay.
The other thing you can do in Outlook is you can go and set the filtering to high instead of low.
Oh, yeah? All right, I'll do that.
Don't tell them to ramp it up higher than it is next.
Why, what happens?
We'll never be able to get a message to you.
I'm going to be using the feedback form myself to get messages through to you.
Oh, I see. You're having a go at my yes.
Maybe a subtle one.
Yeah. So there's a lot of people out there saying, I can't get through.
No, it's a message.
So that's the joys of public life, isn't it, guys?
Spam is a continuing problem. Everyone's getting more of it at the moment.
This is why I think...
We've got to go and we've got to do some... Have a break. I'll be back shortly, okay?
Bye.
Okay, after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my own!
I can't believe you pushed that music up on me while I was speaking.
Damn it, how rude. Yeah, well, you will prattle on for 2 hours as you keep telling us. Come on, get on with the show.
Western Digital's Elements 320 gigabyte external hard drive. That's this week's gadget.
Why?
Well, I bought one.
Oh,
I figured that's a good reason, I suppose.
Fair enough.
Yes, in this day and age of video editing, I'm always scraping for disk space. I get down to under a gigabyte, and then I get all these horrible errors from a Windows machine. It says you're running out of disk space, and I've got to go and clean up stuff. And I was thinking about buying a new disk. I thought I'll just get a new external one, a USB one. This is a great little device from Western Digital. It's got a 320 gig capacity, USB 2, so it plugs straight in, plugs into a PowerPoint, and that's all there is to it, really. Very, very simple. Requires Windows 2000 or XP or Vista or Mac OS X version 10.2 or higher. Comes with a 12-month warranty. Its RRP is $280. I bought one on eBay, and it cost me $130, so that was pretty good.
Can't go wrong.
Cheap disk space. What I love is the fact that it's easy to set up. Instant 320 gigabyte expansion. What I dislike is that it's USB, so it has slow startup after a period of inactivity. You have to wait.
Does it come in FireWire?
Not this model, no.
But you can get one in FireWire.
I think you can get FireWire models, Andrew, yeah.
FireWire's good.
It is fast. The other strange thing was it was shipped with a power supply, but the power supply didn't have a power cable. So that was the only other option.
How does that work?
I don't know.
How long did it last before you filled it up?
It's about a third full at the moment. Yeah.
I've got lots of DVDs for you.
On the way.
Full of music for this show. All right.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
And the Tech Talk Radio website of the week this week is a new addition to the Bureau of there's a mouthful, isn't it? The bomb site, Bureau of Meteorology. They have BlueLink, which was launched last week as a joint effort between the CSIRO, I believe, and the Australian Government's Bureau of Meteorological. The BlueLink forecasts provide information on coastal and ocean currents and eddies, surface and subsurface ocean properties that impacts linked to maritime and commercial operations, defence applications, safety at sea, ecological sustainability, region and global climate. So if you're interested, if you're a boatie, if you want to see where the currents are in the world, three-dimensionality-wise.
A fisher person or...
Oh, ideal for fishing.
Yeah.
So you can see where all the currents are and the temperatures are and what sort of fish like what sort of temperatures. Like us land lovers, I guess, for whatever you want to... We've got our own side. It's the BOM... You know, radar site. You see the rain coming across.
The weather radar.
This is the one for those people.
The underwater weather.
Who, yes, there's the non-land weather type sort of stuff. So you can go and see how it all works. So that's the Tech Talk Radio website of the week, which can be found on www.bom.gov.au/BlueLink.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Unspotted on Tech Talk Radio.
A video of Filipino prisoners dancing to hits such as Michael Jackson's Thriller has become an instant worldwide hit. The video shot in a provincial jail on the central Philippines island of Cebu, I think that's Cebu, has attracted more than 1.9 million views on YouTube.
See, there's hope for us yet, Dr. Ron. Don't you reckon we could get up there and do a little bit of jig or a dance or something?
People will watch anything.
People will watch anything, that's right. It's amazing what'll just capture the interest. I mean, it's just fascinating, the things that are out there.
So, hang on, a bunch of prisoners in a jail did a jig to Michael Jackson's thing.
Yep.
They whack it up on YouTube, 1.9 visitors.
1.9 million.
Could try out for Australian Idol.
Well, there's a thought, isn't
Philippines
it?
Philippines Idol.
Maybe you could do Australian Idol on the internet and we won't have to watch it on free-to-air television. What about that?
That'd be really, really good.
There's a concept.
You've got my vote, Gungadin.
Yes. All right, we'd like your vote too. So you can send us email, like a lot of people have been doing tonight, from all over the world, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au, or visit the website if you're having problems with our spam filter, because it's only going to get worse, as another email there.
What
is
you can
spam?
Ring us up and leave us a message.
You can do that.
On 1-300-664-882.
Don't forget, you get a full 2 hours of us if you want to listen to us on the podcast, because we do. We podcast. Visit the website. And feel free to subscribe, or subscribe through iTunes and things like that as well.
That we prattle on for 2 hours, but we do.
Yeah,
easily.
It's bizarre, really, and we don't get paid for it either. There's dedication and, yes, anyway. I think that's about it for this week. Until the same time next week, we'll be on a new radio station very shortly too. If you live in central Victoria, 100.7 Highlands FM, we're going to be taking the show in the not too distant. So there's,
oh, very cool.
There's another one to add to the list.
Excellent.
Until then, it's bye for now. See you next week, boys.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.